So there you are, and here I am for another Richard Rudin podcast. Thanks very much for listening in, and I hope you'll stay with me for the full podcast, which is quite an extensive one this week. We're going to be going to a fair on mental and physical health and community involvement and social care that was held recently in St. Helens, a lot of it relevant to my interests. And you'll be hearing from somebody who knows me well, one of my support workers. That's all to come in a moment. We'll also be hearing one of the group discussions in the Come Together Hub in St. Helens, which I participated in, which again is relevant to the subject of mental health. Before we go any further, though, some notes and queries and comments. And thank you very much for the generous comments. And mostly they've not been made on public fora, but have been on Facebook from my friends, and also one or two on Blue Sky. But the comments that have been made have been very supportive. I suppose that's fair enough, because if people didn't like the podcast, they wouldn't listen in the first place, and then they wouldn't comment if they didn't like it. But I still appreciate the comments very much, and a lot of you found it interesting and revealing and even inspirational. So thank you for that. And a lot of you commented on the production standards, which are done in my little setup here, and asked what equipment I use. The studio mic I use, so-called, is a new one. I was using a USB Blue Yeti microphone, which was very good. So I got that from Currys, along with the laptop, which I'll mention in a moment. But I've now changed to a Shure MV6 microphone. Well, Shure have been in the business of making microphones for about 100 years, so they know what they're doing. And this one was at an affordable price. What attracted me to it mostly was that it has a built-in filter to cut down on background noise, which, as I'm using just the front bedroom here and isn't acoustically treated or insulated for sound, that was quite important to try and get a professional sound. So that's what I'm using, and I hope you appreciate that production. And what else do I use? Well, for my portable recorder, I use a Tascam PortaCapture X6, the junior version, the smaller version of the PortaCapture X8. Anyway, that's what I use, and it has its own built-in condenser microphones. I also use with that two reporter's microphones, which I plug in with an XLR connection using 48 volt phantom power, if I can say it. And for those of you interested in that sort of thing, and that's a Sennheiser, also a Shure handheld microphone. And that's when I'm out and about. When I'm at home, then I'm using, when I get down to the editing, then I use a Lenovo IdeaPad Pro 5i 16-inch screen. Thank you very much for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing. And for editing and mixing, I use Adobe Audition 2025, clearly the latest version, which goes to a cloud somewhere. And it's the latest version of some software that I've been using since it was called Cool Edit and was owned by a company called Syntrillium back in the mid-1990s. And I've taught and use myself on the successive programs of that, successive updates of that, successive generation, I suppose you'd call it. Anyway, Adobe Audition it is. And a lot of you asked about the music and like the music. Well, I did hunt quite widely for this. I wanted something with a bit jazzy and something which would fit different moods and had different sort of stabs and stings I could take out from it for the podcast to break up the speech. And it's actually from an organisation called Epidemic Sound, which lease out thousands of tracks for use on podcasts and videos and YouTube and that kind of thing. And the actual track is called Lament for a Hummingbird, and it's by Martin Landstron, Landstron. So it's about time we gave Martin a mention to thank him for that excellent piece of music that I use in the podcast. Glad you liked it. And talking of where to find podcasts, since the last episode of this podcast was dropped, Pete Price published his interview with me and the very best of Pete Price. Now, he's had at least one more since then, so you won't find it at the latest of the very best of Pete Price, but you will find it on Apple, Spotify and other platforms, or by doing a search for the very best of Pete Price and then looking for number 213, and the blurb there talks about him talking to me as Richard Duncan, as I've explained before, my professional name, because I'm actually Richard Duncan Rudin, but I use Richard Duncan for commercial radio and for British Forces Radio as well. So I was known in some quarters as Richard Duncan, and that's how Pete remembers him when I was supposedly his boss. But anyway, you can find that podcast. It's about 35 minutes long, and it goes into the background of my professional life and my teaching life and my personal life, for those of you who want to know more about me, should you really wish to. So that's the very best of Pete Price, number 213, available now from your favourite podcast provider. Okay, let's away. Well, we've come to a mental health fair at St Helen's Town Hall, the rather grand Victorian building in the heart of St Helen's on Merseyside in northwest England. And the fair is, the people who are involved in voluntary organisations and charities and the council and so on are invited to take part in the fair. And they've just finished a meeting of people working in the voluntary sector and for the council and for various charities and so forth. And we're just about to go. I'm meeting up with my support worker, Rebecca, from the post enablement team. And we're going to go around the stalls and make a few contacts and hopefully chat to a few people.
My name's Sharon.
Okay, Sharon, what do you represent today?
I represent Cabbage Hall Community Allotment. We're a CIC. It's a community interest company, so
Thank
all
you.
The profits go back into the company. Well, whatever profits we make go back into the company.
And where exactly are you?
We're based on Hard Lane in St Helens.
And go on.
We're at the back of the Windle Pub. Okay. If anybody knows the Windle, everybody in St Helens knows where the Windle Pub is.
I have a worldwide audience, so I have to say.
Yeah. So we're based at the back of the Windle Pub.
Yeah. How big an allotment is it?
We're on the site where we're joined to a St Helens Borough allotment site, which has got 62 allotments on it, but we've got quite a big allotment, which is probably square footage, I can't describe it, but it is quite big. We've got a big massive polytunnel, two cabins, a workshop, a big massive greenhouse that we've just had built, 14 raised beds, and we're wheelchair accessible. The downside to us, which isn't a downside, but it might put some people off, is we are completely off-grid, so we don't have any electricity or running water, but we do combat that in other ways.
And what do you think it does for mental health, working on an allotment? Working on an allotment?
I think it's very good for mental health, because it just being outdoors, I find myself just having your hands in the soil. It's like a child with Play-Doh. That's the only way I can describe it. It is just you can sit and play with the soil, and I can't describe it, because it's so relaxing. You can listen, although we back onto the East Lancs, the traffic is you can't hear it, because you have got all the other sounds. You have got the bird sounds. If you tune into it, you've got the bird sounds, and you've got everything else around you, and you've got nature in the middle of a big town.
Yeah. And of course they can see things growing, so they're planting bulbs in late autumn, and then they're starting to come up, I guess, about now.
They all are starting to come up, and that's another thing that I'm like a child at Christmas when it comes to planting seeds, because I get so excited when you see something as tiny as a grain of rice, and then it grows something as big as a sunflower, or it never, 20 years I've been growing gardening, And it never ever ceases to amaze me that something that tiny can grow something that big, that beautiful, or that important.
And you have to be referred to take part?
No, you don't have to. You don't have to be referred. We're always looking for volunteers. At the moment, we are definitely there 10 till 1, Monday, 10 till 1, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. But until we get more volunteers and more staff, we can't open up any more hours. We run a men's shed on the second Saturday of every month, and them guys are brilliant. They do a lot of work on our allotment as well. But we are there through the week, but they're the guaranteed hours.
Yeah.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 10 till 1.
And you think you said in a men's shed, is it a thing that guys particularly like, or is that being sexist?
It's guys that particularly like it, but yeah. It comes under UK men's sheds.
It is,
that's what it is called. It's UK's men's sheds. So it's guys particularly like it. Ours, we call St. Helens Sheds. So if women want, we don't say that women can't come along, although at the moment we just have men. There is just men there mainly. Well, just men there, full stop. But if a woman wanted to come along and do it, then we would have no objections to that.
Is there a website?
We don't have a website, but we do have a Facebook page. It's Cabbage Hall CIC.
Say it again.
Cabbage Hall CIC.
Cabbage Hall CIC. That's the one to go for on Facebook. That's
yes.
Great. Thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Hi, so I'm Leslie. I'm one of the trustees for Passports and Community Centre.
Hi, I'm Joanne. I'm the Centre Coordinator of Passports Community Centre. I'm also one of the founders of Wildcard Boxing Club.
Okay, so tell us about the club. Well, tell us about that club then first.
Boxing?
Yeah. How's it good for mental health?
We first started in 2009. We've been going now to the present. We set it up with some funding from the police. We got £2,000 from the police to set it up, and then it's just growing massively. We get all the kids off the street. Our numbers have been phenomenal, and they still are, and there's been a lot of success with championships. Our children, who are now older, are now coaching for us. There's so much history of Wildcard. That's very close to my heart. And the reason I do what I do is to change people's lives and to give them something to look forward to.
A safe place.
Somewhere where they feel safe and part of a community.
And goals.
As something to achieve.
What is there about boxing, particularly in mental health, that helps their mental health, do you think? Rid of their aggression, or
yes.
What is it?
Yes, it's controlling their aggression. It's also, it also gives them a purpose and
the ability to think better.
Side
of it as well, with the fitness side of it, obviously we all know that helps you to think clearer, doesn't it? It makes you feel better in order to make better decisions, maybe. It contributes towards
and
that.
It also gets you involved with other people. So the stories that I have heard of parents is their child goes to school, they'll go home and they have no friends outside of school. When they come to our centre, they make new friends, and some of them who have no confidence, their confidence rises because they're doing something active with their lives. As well as getting fit, they're also
cheering each other on.
And they're making a new life for themselves by engaging with everybody. And most of our boxers have achieved something that they thought would never be possible.
Tell us a bit more about the other activities. I see you've got footy here.
Okay, so we can tell you a bit more. So we have one of our professionals, so Martin Murray, a professional boxer for our area. He has his own life story of turning things round and how you can achieve. So what Martin does is works with the young people, because as it's quite common knowledge that Par is a deprived area. The children are struggling, there's knife crimes, all kinds going on, and it's a scary world at the moment. So Martin's passion is to get these kids thinking right. With help from the gym, they'll go into the gym, do some work with Dom, and then also they have like a classroom. So it's think fast. It's to be able to think fast, think smart, you know, and make better life choices. Like some of the children could be on the way to exclusion, expelled, not, you know, spiralling in schools. So they'll get referred to Martin and he will try and turn that round with his partner and Gemma's mum, isn't it, that do that. They do an absolutely wonderful job with that. I do a Connect Toy Library. So this is a sensory library. I started it, didn't have a clue. I've done support work and I've worked
sensory
with...
Sensory library?
Yes, so it's
that.
A toy and leisure library. Yeah. So it's a chance for parents and carers of children from age 0 to 25 with special educational needs or any sensory needs, which we all know is becoming more common. Mm. So they can come and borrow sensory items from our what we call a toy library, same way as you'd borrow a book, because some of these items are quite expensive and some families with the younger ones, they're unsure of what their needs are, so they'll come and let the child explore different, and once they think they really like that, can we take it home and see how they get on, they'll take it home, borrow it, and then they'll return and swap for something else. But if they want to go out and buy that item, they know they're not wasting a lot of money, because some of the items can be expensive to buy, and what's there's nothing worse is than buying something and your child's not interested. So it's a try-in before you buy, basically. We don't sell items, but it's just nice, and obviously some people don't have money for elaborate items as well, so they can come and use ours free and just bring them back, and do you know what, they're loving it, aren't they? They're having it's really growing. We've only been open since May, and the attention it's getting has not shocked me, but overwhelmed me. Yeah.
It's good to go that way than the other way, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a local councillor, Bissy Ossendico, who's really, really keen on the toy library. She's just helped us to get some funding, so that's been really nice for advertising and things. We have a Fit Forever, so this is a lady.
Now, this attracted my attention because I used to go to the gym quite often, believe it or not. I haven't been for years.
Yeah,
is
so this
something somebody
this is
an
just
old
two
codger like me could go to?
I wouldn't call you an old codger, but it is for the mature people who want to go and do some fitness. They can go. At the moment, it looks like a lot of ladies, but men are welcome if they want to take partners and things like that. It's £2 a session, and that they absolutely love that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's our Fit Forever. If you'd like, you can take one of those.
I'll take one of those leaflets, yeah. Right.
We have a group called Ever Evolving. Again, it's with adults with additional needs, and they
young
come.
Young adults. Isn't
yep,
it?
Young adults with additional needs, and they do the boxing. Again, it's
a
change,
isn't it?
And it's empowering them, because things that they never thought possible, they are now doing, and they're improving all the time
because of the fitness. Even in a wheelchair, doing some of these movements, they're getting stronger.
And they're doing pads with the coaches, so the boxing, in the wheelchair, but the boxing. And it changed their lives as well.
And there's a range of disabilities in that group.
Yes.
So Dom, the coach, will train at their capabilities and see, you know, it's not going to be the same as what we'd go in, you know, routine. He will adapt and to suit their needs, which is really helping them. We've had loads of positive feedback for that. They use the community calf. We've got the community calf,
haven't we? Yeah. We rent rooms out for anybody who needs a room to have meetings or anything like that. We rent the rooms out. We have the football pitches, the rugby pitches, for anybody who wants to do outdoor training. We run half programmes.
And then there's Matty Molyneux coming
together.
We do
Matty Molyneux, who again...
So this is called the Come Together Hub.
Yes. Mm.
And they run classes for people who've had addictions.
I'm part of it.
Yeah.
I'm not that they've accepted me.
But, or anything, yeah. Or mental health, or anything like that.
Anybody who's been struggling,
It's
a place for them to come together and feel that they've got a, you know.
So they use our gym and they also use our football pitches as well. So we do offer a variety of things for different communities.
It's all about self-respect, isn't it? Because a lot of people get they mix up respect with fear.
Yeah.
So they see people on the streets of drug dealers, they've got fear, but they haven't got respect. And it's seeing that difference, isn't it? And it has to start with self-respect.
Yes.
One of our young boxers has previously been in a really horrific knife attack, and I mean a severe knife attack with one of these big zombie knives, and he was left with really serious injuries from that. So again, Martin Murray is really, really passionate about this, putting knives down and getting kids to think fast, think smart, you know, and make better choices. So that does tie in with the fear. Drug dealers, drugs are abhorrent, aren't they, on the streets?
It's just getting people in and try and change their lives for the better, really, and show them, you know, what you can achieve by doing this.
And it's for people to feel, even for a moment, that they are worth something. Because, you know, coming from any area, and more so a deprived area, what is the point? Nobody cares. You get all that attitude, don't you? Well, what else is there to do? But once they realise, well, there's this to do, or there's that to do, and it can help, and come on, let's give it a go, or, you know, it can make a massive difference to people.
Yeah.
Now, here's something I know something about, the Chatty Cafe. That's familiar to me. Apparently, this is a nationwide organisation. And I thought it was just in St Helens. This is Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
I'm part of the Chatty Cafe group, which is a countrywide scheme to help people to join in and make friends if they're feeling lonely and they want to come for a cup of coffee, but they can't make that initial step. They can see my sign, which is a big yellow sign, and they come and sit with me and they can talk to me, or they don't have to. But there's a group of us now who meet regularly in the Shakespeare North Theatre in Prescott, and they've made friends and they go out together and they go on jaunts and dinners and lunches. So basically that's what we do. Anyone is welcome to come along.
And you don't have to have a mental health issue?
No. I mean, I've got people who come, and as far as I know, they're all got their marbles, if you'd like. But
thank you.
But that anyone is welcome. And, you know, we have had people who might have had some issues, one lady in particular, but she loves coming and she's made new friends. There's also other things at the Shakespeare to help people involved, like the baby bars, which is for young families, and the children can come and learn to read and share in that involvement. And then there's poetry nights and stuff like that, where people can come and read their own poems.
Like an open mic sort of thing for poets.
Yes, for poets, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So it's not just the theatre that does shows, there's an awful lot of community stuff going on behind it as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And how can people find out more about it? I can see you've got all the social media here from your leaflet here and your board.
Well, if they want to come along to the Shakespeare any time on a Wednesday or a Saturday, 11 till 1, they don't have to come for all that time. They can just drop in and see what it's about. And if they go on to the website or just Google Chatty Cathy and it'll come up and tell them where there's a one near them if they want to go somewhere else, not to Shakespeare, possibly.
And they don't have to chat that much if they don't want to?
No, no. I mean, the topics range from, I don't know, the weather to going out or what's on the theatre, and then what you're doing daily. We don't have a lot of politics or religion, but we haven't said you can't talk about that. But no one really wants to these days anyway.
It's all too depressing.
Yes, yes.
Thanks very much, Jackie. Right, well, we're with the Richard Rudin podcast, and I've got my worker with me, my support worker for the post-enablement team, Rebecca.
Hi, Richard. Hi, I'm Rebecca Taylor. So I work for Voluntary and Community Action, and I'm a Mental Health Alliance link worker. So basically, I get people involved in groups and activities, people that have been isolated, usually through their mental health. I get referrals through the recovery team from Harry Blackman House, meet with them, get to know them, find out their interests, and try and match them with a suitable activity, really. So it's not so much about... it's a supportive role, but it's mainly to help people with the confidence and get them back... get back out there again and very much complement the work that the recovery team has done with them. So it's like the sort of... cherry on the cake, really. So the recovery team have done that sort of important work with getting them well enough to, you know, access the service that we're offering, really.
Yeah. And so when you looked at me, what did you think? Hello, what's going to be good for Richard? What sort of thing did you come up with? Just tell us about that.
Yeah, so because you told me a lot about your professional career in journalism, and then as a university lecturer, and you know you're so articulate in the way that you speak, and obviously a very, very intelligent man who's had a fantastic career, you know, and I just wanted to sort of find something that was right for you, and it was difficult, really. I had to think quite carefully about it, and I wasn't sure what I was going to match you to, really, because you're quite an unusual referral for me, to be honest.
That word's very loaded, yeah, unusual.
Yeah, well, unusual in...
My grandmother used to mean all sorts of things by it.
No, sort of unique in the career that you've had and the skill set that you've got, you know, and wanted to try and sort of match something that was right for you, really. And so I knew about the media group run by the Come Together Hub, but I thought it was just for recovering addicts, so I wasn't sure if it would be a good match. But actually, when you said you were willing to give it a go, and I think with this project, it's about people being willing to try things, and I think that's what's so good about you, is that you've been willing to try new things, and that is half the battle, really. And you're very, you know, and then you're very honest about how you feel about things as well, so that's good for me, because I can gauge what's right and what isn't. So when we went to give that a try, I wasn't sure if it was going to work, but actually it's been a very good group for you, and you were very well received, and fantastic to see you doing what you do best, you know, interviewing people, chatting to people, improving your confidence, getting back out there, getting those social interactions again. And so it's been very rewarding for me to watch you do that.
What's the age range of your clients? Well, I mean, I must be one of the oldest, I would imagine, because I am in the group. We'll work that out.
No, it really varies. So I've got people referred to me are only in their 20s. You know, I've got a couple that are like 23, 25. And then there's a lot of women who are a similar age to me, really. It's a lot of women that are sort of late 40s, early 50s. And I think it may be, it's possibly to do with menopause, yeah, that people seem to have this, a lot of problems when they reach that age. So it does tend to be a lot of women at that age group, yeah. But it does really vary, and there are some there are some older referrals as well, you know. So you're not one of my, you know, I've had people older as well,
yeah,
sort of into the 70s. So,
and how common is this fear of other people and crowds and socialising? Because, I mean, I wasn't, and then I was when I became mentally ill.
Yeah.
And now I'm just going back to how I was before. It's taking a while. How common is that?
It's really common with the people that I've seen. So when they become ill, they isolate themselves from the friends and the family. And then because they become so used to being at home, it's incredibly difficult for them to get back out again. So the project that I run, it's about making those first steps. And hopefully I'm someone that they feel comfortable with primarily. So it's about, my job's about putting people at ease, getting them to make those first steps and just guiding them in the right direction, really. Just to give them that little bit of a boost, a little bit of confidence.
What do you think of the stalls we've been around today? What do you think of the range of activities and resources that are available? Because a lot of people just don't know about all this stuff that's going on.
No, I know.
It's like unpeeling an onion, isn't it?
Yeah.
The more you go into it, the more you realise how many voluntary groups there are, how many charities.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic what's available.
And that's what's so unique about this project, because it's innovative in a way, because we're linking the, you know, health service with the voluntary sector, and it's a new approach to mental health. And so I'm always surprised, because there's new things happening all the time, so it's good for me to come to this event and just remind me what is going on, so that when I'm meeting new referrals like later today, I can tell them about these things. And so it's so important for us to keep abreast of what's going on and talk to people and network and find out the right sort of activities for people.
And there's a lot for young men in particular. We know there's this mental health crisis with, well, men under 45, not that young.
Yeah.
A lot about sports and boxing in particular, which seems to be a really good way of getting young men who are feeling angry and alienated off the streets and doing something positive.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a fantastic activity for them to get involved with, isn't it? And something that they see as quite an attractive sport, an attractive option for them, isn't it? And we need more of that in light of sort of recent horrific events and knife crime, and we need these types of activities available for our young people. To help them get out of those sort of lifestyles and situations, you know.
At the other end of the extreme, we've heard about allotments and gardening, really quiet, meditative, I can say, sort of activities.
Yeah. Again, I've been up to the allotments with a few of the referrals that I've had, and it's just so lovely to see how relaxing that is for people and how they start to wind down when you get into these environments, and you can see it's good for the mental health immediately, as an immediate effect. Being outside and being in nature is, I think, one of the best things you can do.
And there's obviously a lot of demand for your services. Does it sometimes be quite difficult to decide who they're going to be referred to and who you're going to have to let go, or do you manage to accommodate everybody?
Yeah, I must say it's I get quite attached to my referrals, because obviously I want the best for them, and so I find it difficult to discharge people. I think that's my you know, just a problem that I have with the service. That's quite difficult, but we do. There's only myself and my colleague John that are running the Care Navigator service, and between us, it just finds its level. You know, we just sort of split the workload, and so far it's worked quite harmoniously between us. We've worked it really well, and it just somehow works out, really.
If you're on section 117 like me, you never get rid of me.
I know, yeah, that's fine. You can stay with us because of your skills as well in this part. You know, it's really useful to us because it helps us to promote the service as well. So
it's good
to have you on board.
Oh, thank you very much. So are you off to see another client now?
Yes. So I've got a new lady this afternoon.
Right. And what are you going to recommend her, do you know?
I'm thinking of the boxing. I've just been speaking to Par Sports.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that might be quite a nice one to suggest, especially the one-to-one training. as a bit of a starter, really. Just think that that could be something that might appeal to her.
You have to get involved as well in the activity.
Yes. So
you have to do everything. Yeah. Media
that's
to
right.
boxing.
Yeah.
Keep fit.
Absolutely.
Gardening.
Yeah.
You have to do that, be an all-round person.
Yeah. But it's been good for my mental health as well, trying all these things and getting involved. It is. Yeah. That's exactly what it's like. It reminds me of, I don't know if you ever used to watch a programme called Quantum Leap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of that, really, sort of getting into a new situation with a new person, new experience.
Every day's different.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic, varied job, and you meet such interesting people. Yeah.
Well, one of the most wide-ranging of the services offered seem to be from the St Helens Voluntary Community Action, and Lynn Barton is with me now to explain what they get up to.
So we go out into the community to all different groups and activities, originally doing blood pressure checks, and that then gets us into conversations with people about their health, their well-being, and then we can direct them, if they want to, we can direct them to the places where they can get the public health. So a bit like social subscribing. That's what we do. So this is the third year that I've been doing it for now. And we are now, we also go out with the NHS mobile bus. I don't know if you've seen that around. So we do vaccines in the community. Yesterday we was out doing, I wasn't myself, I'm coordinating, but doing cervical smears. So we're kind of bringing the services into the community rather than people having to go to the services, to the doctors or hospitals, making it more accessible for people in the future.
Do you think that's the main thing that distinguishes you from the NHS, that people are bothered about going to an outpatient's department and going to clinics and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so it's the NHS, it's run by the NHS. But like yesterday we was working on the cervical smear bus, and the ladies that came said that when they get their appointment from the doctors or the hospital, they get anxious. So it might be 2 or 3 weeks in advance, 4 weeks in advance. They get anxious and then they talk themselves out to going. Whereas with us, it's on the spur of the moment. So they'd be out shopping or they'd be at the library picking the books up, whatever. And it's on the spur of the moment and no appointment needed. So it works better, the fact that they're not having to think about it and get anxious about it. It's like, we're here, do it now, and they'll do it immediately. Plus, getting time off work or planning around families, etc., etc., it's difficult, isn't it? Whereas when we're there, if we're in a library and someone's changing the books, and we'll say, oh, have your blood pressure done while you're here? So it works, and because we're not in uniform as well, then it doesn't, people don't get anxious because we feel that we're just the same as them. We're not in any uniform, there's no appointments, we don't judge, the numbers don't go anywhere, it doesn't go to the doctor, it doesn't go to the NHS, it's just kind of like, it's between us. If you want to take it to your doctor, that's entirely up to you, we can only guide, that's all we can do.
When it comes to vaccines, there's a lot of social media stuff about harm that vaccines do, and there's been a lot of propaganda. Do you find there's resistance to the MMR jab, for example?
Not, because when we're out on the mobile bus, the only people that come are the people that want to get vaccinated. So we don't really see any people that are not interested in vaccines. They come because they want to, and they can't get appointments like with the NHS. They can't get appointments in the doctors. They can't get appointments in clinics, or it's not convenient, or it's 2 bus rides away, etc. That's why we take it out into the community, so it's more convenient and more accessible travel-wise as well.
And do you have a website so people know where you're going to be?
Yes, it's called the Living Well Bus, and they have a Facebook page, and the timetable's on there for the full month of where the bus will actually be, the locations. Yep.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Wow, there are so many stalls and so many interesting people to talk to. I couldn't fit them all in the podcast, especially as I did promise you that this week's podcast would contain a bit of a discussion at the St Helens Community Hub. Now, this is one of the so-called podcasts that they do. We do a regular reading, daily reading, but then we also have a discussion. And this was one which I thought was very appropriate for a lot of what we talked about this week at St Helens. It's about fear, because a lot of the problems with young people in particular, and social problems, come from the fact that they fear not being accepted, not being respected, not being hard enough in the case of men. And so we had a bit of a discussion with that with some of the recovering addicts and myself a little while ago. So I thought you'd be interested in hearing this.
Good morning. Welcome to the Come Together Hub podcast. My name's Nicola, and today I'm joined by
Lisa,
Amy,
Stephen,
Angela,
Richard.
And today we're going to be doing a little bit of a discussion around fear. Whether that's in recovery, whether that's in life, whether it's mental health, and just how maybe it has affected all of us in some way, because we know it's a human experience. So I just kind of wanted to put it out there to the group, if anyone has had any experience with how fear has impacted their life, their recovery. I know it was a bit of a starting point for me, the fear of being judged, of not being liked, of being stigmatised around my addiction and my mental health, definitely put a block in between me reaching out for help. So has anyone had any experience with that as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, fear was a big thing when I first came into recovery. I was like, just scared of everything. I was scared of the lack of drugs. I was scared of the life. You know, everything was just fearful. It was like bills, you know, that remained unpaid. I was fearful of them. And just coming into recovery was scary. And then the lack of drugs in life after that, obviously, you do get, you know, I think the fear does hit you. But feeling it and realising that if you just go through it, it passes. And that, you know, it does get easier once you get through that, but it's like feeling it and doing it anyway. Do you know what I mean? And constantly doing that. And then the more you do that, the more you gain, like, a bit more, less fear, yeah. You know, and the more, but yeah, I think, like you said, stigma was a big thing as well, and being judged when I first came in recovery. But the more I do life, the less fearful I am. And the more I've got God in my life, the less fearful I am.
I think we can't live without fear, can we? It's kind of sometimes a necessity, but anybody else had any experience with that?
I struggle around with fear, you know, since I've come in into recovery and that, though, it has got less. But I was like, I think it was with my confidence and that, and wanting to be liked, and I did a lot of people pleasing, you know, so that people would like me, and like making myself look like stupid and stuff like that, you know, because I'm thinking, oh, people are laughing at me, and that fear around it, being around people who I don't know, like strangers, and you know, thinking, are they going to judge me, and can I trust them, and you know, because when you've been hurt so many times, you're just like fearful of like everything. Well, I was anyway. But since I've come in recovery, it is getting better. I mean, I still get scared. Like, I'm scared now, like, but I just, like, try and, you know, push myself just to do, like I did a reading, like, just for today and stuff like that, you know, do things to try and help to take that fear away.
Solutions.
Yeah.
How about you, Rich?
I was sectioned the last time because I feared having electroconvulsive therapy.
Yeah.
Put electrodes in the brain because I'd seen Jack Nicholson in one
floor. Yeah, me too.
So they sectioned me to carry it out against my will. Because normally you have to sign this consent, and they did it against my will. And the first time, I got completely paranoid about it, and I thought they were going to harm me while I was under anaesthetic. Yeah. And then second or third time, I realised they weren't going to harm me. And then by the fourth time, I started to feel a lot better. And I had 12 sessions in all over 6 weeks, which is the maximum under the NHS, and it made such a dramatic difference to my mental health. And I'm now 6 months since I've been discharged today.
Amazing.
And it felt a lot better. And I'd encourage anybody, if they have it offered to them, they only offer it to you if they feel everything else has failed, medication, psychotherapy, everything else has failed. It's a last resort. It's they call it fact of life or death.
Well, it is,
so if they say you need it, you need it, and have it. Yeah. And there's so many people who have benefited from it, not only in this country, but in Australia, America. I mean, I always say, you know how litigious Americans are. They wouldn't do it, had 100,000 Americans happen last year. They wouldn't do it if it did you harm.
Yeah. No.
And how amazing to hear like a positive story, because like you said, when I think of that, I mean, I wasn't sectioned with my mental health, very close, I think, but I think you do think of those things in movies. I think the same with recovery and addiction. Yeah. If you've not had lived experience, like all of us around the table, you think of treatment in any capacity, you link it to a film or something you've read, and usually it's over dramatized, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. What about you guys? What kind of fear did you have coming into recovery, and then how did you feel you were overcoming it?
I think Lisa shared it, like, for when I was like in addiction and then giving up that drugs, what I liked and I loved, and giving up the drink and whatever, a part of my life felt like it was gone.
Yeah.
I was afraid what I'm going to do with my life, like how boring it will become in recovery. Don't get me wrong, I find it a bit boring now, recovery, because it's like, what else can I do with my life? I'm afraid of being lonely. Like you say, going into meetings, sitting in meetings and not from the area and getting judged. Maybe that was my head, my disease. Fear factor based illness for me. It's, you know, getting judged for what I caused myself pain when I've had my workout with my sponsor at the time. Was fear being judged from him. And it was just my head thinking that. End of day, we're all. Well, for me, I'm just like another person in recovery, and you know, I'm feared of like getting rejection from my kids.
Big one.
And I was speaking to Ryan before about my daughter, and it's last Thursday. It was like I wanted to go out and explore, going not use drugs but drink, but I was feared of like what happens after that, getting the train to where my daughter lives, causing chaos. Not being here today, I reckon, if I would have done that, I think I would have been out there sat in a lonely dark place on the streets,
and then eventually not being able to have access, well, more
have
to
access
children,
to my children, and losing everything. I'm grateful.
Good. Amazing. Thank you. What about you?
I think mine's pretty similar to what's been said. Mine was fear of like dealing with things. I thought, you know, once I came off drugs and alcohol, you know, I'd have to cope with everything. The debts, the court cases I've still got impending from, you know, as a result of my addiction. You know, the death of my child and stuff like that. It's having to deal with all that and actually feel it without having the drugs numb it for me. Also, like, you know, the fear of not being liked, not being accepted, because, you know, I was brought up in a way where I was always told I'm nothing. You'll never be nothing. Don't even try to be anything because you're going to fail. So I automatically walk into a room and assume no one likes me. So it was that fear of not being accepted, not being loved for who I was, because I wasn't good enough. You know, but since I've come back around, you know, I realised that there is people out there that want to help you. You know, with a straight frame of mind, not being under the influence, I can reach out and get that support from services with debts, counselling around the death of my child and stuff like that, and I can do it and remember to keep them appointments because I'm straight-headed. You know, and I can go to meetings and stuff like that and talk to people that are like-minded like me, and you know, they do accept me the way I am. You know, they do love me for who I am, and they carry me until I carry myself.
Thank you guys. Well, I think, you know, we've shared some really good things today, and I love that we've got different experiences, whether it's addiction recovery, mental health, or if you're dual diagnosis. I think the point of what we said is like, there is help. And I was just looking around the table thinking, when we're all talking about not being accepted, thinking, look at us. We are, know, you know, this are. Like this is a group of people who are sharing vulnerable things and accepting each other.
And we all face the same fear, don't we? And that's the thing, that, you know, look at similarities, you know, again.
The differences, thank you. Thanks, guys. Well, thanks for listening, and we hope you got something from it. Come back and catch us again next week, and please like, share, and subscribe.
Well, I hope you found that interesting. In fact, I hope you found the whole podcast interesting, and thanks for staying through to the end. You're a true valued subscriber. Don't forget to spread the word if you enjoy what you're hearing. We'll be back next time, well, in a few days' time maybe, with more on mental health and more on associated topics.